seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Hello, you're welcome along to the Ryan Line. It is Nathan with you on this Thursday. And of course, the man we named the podcast after, Shane Ryan. How are you?
I'm great, Nathan. How are you?
That was a mistake in hindsight, wasn't it? I should have wanted equal billing. I should have demanded it.
I like the idea that you're the employee there, and it's just called the Murphy Line, and you just happen to bring me on every year,
exactly.
every week, asking questions.
Maybe it would have, you know, had a dramatic increase in listeners if it was that way. Are you not open to it becoming the Ryan and Murphy Line?
Yeah, I mean, I think we should find a good pun, though. Is there something with Ryan and Murphy? If only there was a famous person named Ryan Murphy.
But, yes.
Yeah, Murphy Ryan. The Rifey, the Marion. There's got to be something there.
Send your suggestions in.
Yeah.
I'm sick of this bullshit of you getting all the credit.
The Shathan Line?
Danger here.
Nane? No.
Yeah, this isn't your finest work. This is why, I need to have my name ago. Over the door.
Yeah. Look, I think maybe, I think we should consider, just doing you. And I'll kind of show up and I'll ask you made up questions from American listeners.
Wow. Fair enough. We'll try that sometime.
Yeah. Yeah. The mustache. we'll do equivalents of each person that's
Who is there an American beard? You couldn't make up the beard. That's the thing.
The mustache.
It'd be too crazy. No, it'd be too out there.
It would, yeah. No, an American version of the beard would be dangerous. He'd have guns. He'd be into, like, you know, some dangerous political stuff. No, we can't have that.
How are you, Shane?
I'm pretty good. I think everything's good. I'm trying to think what's new. I'm doing rigmarole again, which I don't enjoy anymore. But
remind
otherwise,
us.
Rigmarole is this thing I do on Instagram where I try to make on my lawn, I try to make 5 straight shots through a goal that's about 45 feet, 50 feet away, with 5 different implements. And so it's like, first thing I do is hit a child's plastic tennis racket that I hit a tennis ball with. Then I kick a soccer ball. Then I chip a golf ball, but I have to chip it with a driver. So it's difficult. And then I throw a deflated football, a child's football. And then I hit a child's bowling ball, a plastic bowling ball, with a wiffle ball bat.
I'm watching here. I just followed you on Instagram, so I look forward to watching the updates.
It's tough. It's been 55 days. The most I've ever gotten is 3. No, I'm sorry. I got 4 the first day, which is insane. And then I've never gotten more than 3. And I think I've only gotten 3 once. The rest of the days have been 2. So it's an exercise in futility to some degree, and I quit for a while, but now I'm going to day 100 to see if I can do it.
The thing I admire about Shane Ryan is he always commits to the thing.
I try.
You leave it all out there.
It's a crazy world, Nathan. It's a crazy world out there. I feel like these bits are all I have sometimes.
Yeah, and this podcast with your name.
Yeah,
not mine.
Along with my family.
Yeah. Third. Yeah. Yeah. Question for Shane. Wyndham Clark, discuss. Reformed character are just doing a better job at hiding that he's an asshole?
So what I love about this question, people can't see this, but the name Wyndham is butchered, which is understandable. It's not an easy name to spell. But they added an E in Clark, which is like an unusual... Like, in America,
Irish,
it would be like...
That's obviously an Irish thing, because we don't... Darren Clark has an E at the end.
Yeah, I was just like, you went out of your way to get the last name incorrect, too. I enjoyed that.
And you don't find many Wyndhams down in Ballyhonus, I can tell you.
No. Yeah, I read about how that happened. I don't think he's named after the hotel, but he must be named after the hotel, basically. Webb Simpson's daughter is also named Wyndham because that was the first tournament he won. And so that was his, like, way of honoring her. Anyway... Wyndham Clark, is he a reformed character or doing a better job at hiding that he is a bad guy? I don't think, you know, Here's the thing. When he started winning in 2023, when he won at Quail Hollow and then he won the U.S. Open, the whole thing was like he'd had a lot of trouble. You know, he couldn't control himself on the course. He had death of a parent to deal with. And he was working with a sports psychologist and had gotten it all together. And this world-class talent that he had was finally coming to fruition, et cetera, et cetera. And he had a great year. And, of course, he beat Rory at and Ricky Fowler at L.A. Country Club. So that was, you know, that was kind of like, well, here's the end of the sports movie, right? The guy did it. Since then, he's kind of like, you know, he punched the locker room at Oakmont. He's always got some quote about LIV Golf where it's like, you know, you hear rumors that maybe he, you know, was thinking of going. But what you definitely hear is things about him kind of, you know, being very upset at the players coming back, saying like, well, we all would have taken the money if we knew we could have done this. So he's kind of fallen in the people's esteem a little bit, or even a lot. And so now it's like that old sports thing of, does winning fix every character issue you have, right? If people didn't like you, does the fact that you won a golf tournament now make all of that okay? And in some cases it does, right? Like Tiger Woods winning the Masters erased all of his sins. But Tiger Woods is, you know, Wyndham Clark is not Tiger Woods. So I don't know. I don't know if he's reformed. I don't know if he's changed fundamentally at all. What I do know is he's found his golf game again. And he played so well, I thought, at the Byron Nelson. Now, granted, this is, you know, the easiest course they play on tour. He got to 30 under. Scotty won it at 31 last year. But he played so well with so much firepower that, again, I went right back to that thing of, this guy really is, at his best, one of the best players in the game. The level of talent is obscene. Whether he can harness that, whether now he's going to be a threat at the majors, we'll see. But I would suspect that he is. I mean, I would suspect that you're going to see Wyndham Clark compete for a major even in the last two this year because he's, again, once he's got that level, he is so dangerous.
I'm still in a place with Wyndham Clark where I'm not sure who's Wyndham Clark and who's Cameron Young. Like, I'm getting there. I know they're two different people. But I'm still sometimes I remember Cameron Young beating Rory and, you know, down the stretch and doing all those incredible things and realize it was Wyndham Clark. But now that Cameron Young has sort of emerged as his own person, I'm starting to see the differences between them. On the Wyndham Clark, so at the Open last year, which was the first major after the US Open, and he came out on the Sunday, and I was quite impressed when he came out to the media and sort of explained what had happened and the various different processes he was going through so that the next time it's in Oakmont, is it in 33, that he'd be able to go back and play, that he's, you know, not banned forever and all of that. And there was a little part of me that was, this is a small golf story, but because there's no golf stories, this is now a big story of man got angry after bad round and, ooh, interesting, he's a bad guy. Like, he doesn't strike me as a Patrick Reed.
Well, yeah, I don't know. You know, I don't know. It's hard to get a sense of these guys completely. I just started laughing because, have you heard the nickname that No Laying Up gave him?
No.
They call him the blow pig, and it's just based on wind and ham, like blowing wind and ham is pig. And it's on, I looked up his Wikipedia, and blow pig is listed in the nickname section, which is very funny to me that Wikipedia's like, yeah, we got to put that in there. It's funny how old he is too. He's 32. So it's not like, you know, he's not a young man anymore. So I don't know. You know, it's like personality-wise, it's hard to tell. It's truly hard to tell. And I always try to stay away from the, hey, he won, so he's redeemed kind of deal.
Question for Shane. Interested in Shane's thoughts on Rory basically becoming a part-time golfer. While I understand that he no longer needs the money, surely there's an onus on the most famous player in the world to play more than once a month. So much talk of LIV stopping the top players playing against each other. We've only had Rory v. Scotty once since the Masters.
Well, I assume he's at, you know, Shinnecock already. That's where he's been for the last month, would be my guess. Rory, it is kind of funny. It's like, what is your obligation? What is your responsibility? It'll be interesting next year. Well, I guess not next year because they released half the schedule and it looks basically the same. It would be interesting in 2028 if they ever get this like series of elevated events where it's, you know, where you only have to play 20 each year, how many of those he will play, because he clearly doesn't want to be playing even the signature events, all of them. He doesn't want to be at all of those. So, yeah, with Rory, I don't know. I would like to see him play more often. I think everybody would. He clearly doesn't want to. So it's I always have trouble being like, it's your obligation, it's your duty, but it kind of is. You know what I mean? Like, you're a professional golfer. It's not a crazy ass to play like 20 events a year. Or maybe it is a crazy. I would hate playing 20 events a year. I don't like traveling at all. So maybe I should have more sympathy for him. But it was funny because I did this story on the time Walter Hagen lost the PGA Championship trophy. And as part of that, he won the PGA on Long Island one year. The next day, like the PGA ended on a Saturday. The next day, he played 36-hole exhibition at Wingfoot. 2 days after that, he went to Ohio to play a 36-hole exhibition. Then on the Thursday and Friday, he went to Massachusetts to play against Francis Wehmet in a 2-day exhibition. So within like 5 days after playing, and by the way, because PGA was match play, he played like 201 holes over a week to win that thing. In the 5 days after that, he played like 6 complete rounds. So I don't know. It's kind of a tough question because I get wanting to stay home. I get wanting to be with your family. But it does feel like a very part-time thing now. It's crazy.
Like, there's a lot in this that is going to become a greater issue for golf. And while obviously there's a focus on Rory at the moment because has such a light schedule, he will play more later in the year than Scottie Scheffler will and the leading Americans will, who basically post-tour championship pick one or two tournaments. Rory's going to go to the Middle East again. If those tournaments happen, which I hadn't really thought about up till now, but you'd have to think there's a significant doubt about all of that happening. You know, he's gone to India, he goes to Australia, he's sort of taking on a slightly different type of schedule. And I guess to justify that is keeping it a little bit lighter at this time of the year. We're in an era of unprecedented wealth that they don't need to play for the money. It is absolutely irrelevant for the top guys, the prize money right now, because they have so much of it that they're not playing for that. They're only playing for prestige, and Rory's taking it to another level of, I'll do whatever it takes to peak at the four majors. What that means for professional golf, is professional golf unique in this scenario? Like, LeBron James can't just go, I've made enough money, I'm kind of going to put the feet up for half the year because he's on a team.
Yeah.
In other sports, and now we're back to the existential question that, you know, dominates all of our podcasts of, is golf actually a sport? In most other sports, you have to stay fit. So you have to be, so a tennis player couldn't go, I'm just going to play the four majors. I'm just going to play the four Grand Slams. Like, you need to be fit enough and sharp enough. Whereas actually golf is quite unique that you can go, as long as I'm relatively sharp on the range and I have enough, I can kind of do whatever I want.
Yeah.
You've no obligation to the team. You have no obligation to your body.
Sure. Yeah, it's true. And I think there is a thing of, like, people sometimes like to play a tournament before a major to kind of get that, you know, that part of themselves going. But no, you're right. I mean, it's like, you're going to have to obligate someone like Rory to play more. And it is a funny thing too, where it's like, there's so much money now in the game and with sponsors where, hey, I won a tournament, I'm fine for the next 5 years. Why would I play? It's this big thing. It's just like this, you know, you're between a rock and a hard place, or what's the thing, like an immovable object and an unstoppable force. It's like, when it's going to come to a point where someone like Rolapp is going to have to say, you're going to have to play these events, otherwise there's a severe penalty. And he'll be lucky that there's no LIV Golf anymore, right? To be a thing that they can go, okay, well, I'm going to LIV, because that's part of the problem here. Part of the problem is that you can't enforce anything right now, including the rollback, including anything, because you can lose these guys. They can just say, okay, well, I'm going to LIV, no problem. Now that that's going to be over, I think there is going to come a point where you have to kind of mandate some certain things. And then see what happens. I mean, like, these guys might just say, screw you. And then you have to decide what screw you means. Like, what are you going to do? How severe will your penalties be, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't know. It's all coming down the pipeline. But it's so true that, you know, it's we have these tournaments. Like, this week is a good example. Last week was a good example where you may have a guy like Scheffler in last week. This week, you don't have any of the top eight golfers in. I think JJ Spahn at 9 is the only top 10 golfer playing. Still, somehow, these tournaments are good. Like, we've had some interesting endings. It's funny, all the Texas tournaments, you had Gary Woodland winning one of them. You had Spahn winning another one. Last week, you had Wyndham Clark. All these kind of comeback narratives. This week, who knows what will happen? You still got a few interesting guys in the field. But without the top players in, you're not going to have the eyes on it, even if it's a good finish. And I think that's a problem. I mean, and it's like, God, you don't need every single one of the top eight in, but you should have like five of them, right? When you're having these marquee tournaments. And this is a course, Colonial, this week, where it's this historic course. It's a great course. How do you have such a poor field? They know they have to do something about it. It's a big part of everything they're trying to do. It's a big part of trying to strip basically the lesser events and call them second tier or whatever. But you're going to have a fight on your hands. And so that how that plays out in 2028 is truly, I think, maybe the most fascinating PGA Tour story that we have.
And it hasn't been fully explained around, say, last week and the Byron Nelson. What happens there? Because the word from Rolap and people around him last week seem to be these second tier events that they're bringing in, that they're going to bar the top tier players from playing in them. Because obviously what they don't, so because they're now going to let 120 in again, that they don't want 80 to 120 all rocking up and denying the next layer a chance. But it also means that, is Scottie Scheffler going to be able to play the Byron Nelson? So Scottie wants to play this tournament. He makes the tournament. And you're going, no, but that would be unfair and all the other guys if you just rocked up.
Yeah. Well, it's like, or Spieth too, right? Mm. I mean, you know, these are guys who the Byron Nelson let play in their tournament when they were 16 years old. And so they have, you know,
your version of an Irish Open, like we touched on this before, that totally. Like, the Texas events are that where, if you didn't have, they're very fortunate, they constantly have this caliber of golfer coming through, but because they always get Scheffler and Spieth, you have a tournament the same way we always get Rory and Lowry, you have a tournament.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. And without that, if you're actually telling him you can't play, I mean, you have to think that Byron Nelson would go, you know, screw you. Like, this is so all excellent questions. We're going to see.
No answers.
We're going to see. It remains up in the air. You know, Rolap at the Players said by the Travelers Championship, you're going to hear more about how this is going to change. I can't wait. I'm looking forward to it. But it's going to take a lot of political capital. And it's going to be a fight. So we'll see. There's such a inertia in professional golf that he's going to have to fight back.
Will Wyndham Clark name his child CJ after winning the CJ Cup at the Byron Nelson or Byron Nelson?
Well, either one would be kind of fine, right? I mean, that's the funny thing about it. Wyndham is the more crazy name. Yeah, Byron Nelson Clark. Nothing wrong with that name.
What about J.J. Spahn calling his child Valero?
That would be a cool name. Some of these would be, Valero's kind of a cool name. Valero Spahn.
Brant Snedeker. Yeah. Brant's probably on grandchild stage by now. Myrtle. I say that about Brant. I'm probably the same age as Brant Snedeker now that I throw that out there. Or is Brant
on Senior's Tour? No, I don't think you are. I think you're right.
Brant's Senior's like, Tour, isn't he?
Yeah, Brant's in his 50s. He is. Oh, he's only 45. Jeez, you're right. Wow.
Holy shit.
He's been around forever.
That is depressing. So, that is.
He's younger than you. That's crazy.
No, he's not younger than me. Let's just be absolutely. He's not far off, though. He's not far off.
I got you. I like, you were right on that. You were like, no, sir.
I would have. Like, there is a bit. When he's wearing the hat, he looks 45, but when he takes the hat off, he looks about 60.
So that's the thing. There was that photo last week when he won that came out that it was like, wow, he's an old looking 45. But you know, look, these guys have been in the sun all the time.
Yeah, I would have had him at the same age as a Jim Furyk.
Same here. Yeah, he's been around forever. I mean, that's the problem with these guys. It's like, you know their names for literally for probably 24 years we've known him, and so it's tough to be like, oh, that's all he is.
Speaking of Jim Furyk, he was in Ireland last week.
Yeah.
Or this week. He was up in Mayo in Ballinrobe. Home place of my father at the races, at the horse races. He got JP McManus's helicopter up with all the family.
I saw the interview with the horse announcer who was just like, I don't know anything about golf.
Jim Furyk's like, I don't know anything about horses. Jim Furyk, so he was over doing some research again. Much like Luke Donald's recent research, it was like, you don't seem to be working that hard. There seems to be a lot of helicopters, a lot of private jets, a lot of nice dinners. You know, you'd struggle to class it as work. You're going to be getting this question constantly over the next while, I presume. Does Shane think there's any chance the USA do anything radically different for next year?
Well, yeah, I do. I mean, I think it's not going to be as bad as Bethpage. That's the thing. And so, you know, we've talked about this before. I've written about it at length. I think Jim Furyk is a good choice. I think he's going to restore them to the system that came about after the Glen Eagles debacle that got you wins at Hazeltine, that got you wins at Whistling Straits. I don't think they're going to win at Adair Manor, like, period. I just think that's, you know, very, very unlikely. But what you need to do is restore a sense of continuity, a sense that we have a system where we know how to deal with all the logistical things, that we have our stats guys that we take seriously. So we're putting out four ball teams and foursomes teams that make sense. And you've got to kind of ingrain this in the generation below you. They've got to see it. They've got to buy in, because this is what Europe has done for 40 years. And if you don't do it, you're going to keep getting clobbered by them. And what you really can't do is, you know, lose and then veer wildly to a new philosophy, to a new captain who doesn't really have a system in place, doesn't really have an idea of what he wants to do. This was the Keegan Bradley thing, right? That was the Tom Watson thing to a certain degree in Glen Eagles. This was a guy who really didn't have any big plan about how to match, like, this European firepower, this logistical stuff, this organizational stuff. So I think Furyk's going to get you back to that. And I hope people listen. I hope people, the really funny thing is, when he loses at Adair Manor, I hope people don't overreact to it. If I were Jim Furyk right now, I would be going to everybody, listen, this is what we're doing the next 2 years, is getting things back on track. We're going to try to win. We're going to try to win at Adair Manor. We're not going in to lose. We're going to do our best. But I need a commitment that even if we do lose, and look, even if we lose by 10 points, because that kind of thing can happen on the road and has happened often, even if we lose by 10 points, we have got to commit to a long-term system here. You can't come back in, you know, 2029 or 2020, whatever, and go, oh, the captain is Patrick Reed because he's fiery, or, you know what I mean? Some stupid choice like Keegan Bradley was. So that would be my thing. But I think he will get them back on track. I think he's going to take it very seriously. I was impressed by his press conference at Aronimink. I think he really, not just because he said he likes my writing, which he did, Nathan. I hate to brag, you know me, but he did say that.
You've been bought off.
Yeah, I've been completely bought off. No, but I said that, you know, the piece I wrote about him being a good choice came before that. So, you know, I'm on the up and up. So, yeah, I think he'll get him there. I think he'll get him there. But the Americans have to listen and they have to buy in. And that's a dicey prospect, because we got some fools on our side, Nathan. We got some dopey dopes.
The Beard, he's updating his own questions as things develop. President's Cup, Keegan Bradley chosen as vice-captain. Comment, please. Update, I misunderstood. It's the Ryder Cup. Are the USA clueless about appointing leaders? Yes.
So it's not the Ryder Cup. It is the President's Cup.
Oh, it is the President's Cup. Okay.
Yes.
You know, oh, that, people, it, no?
No, I mean, look, I have not been impressed by Keegan Bradley. I don't like Keegan Bradley as a captain, not only because I thought brought a certain arrogance to it, wasn't like really listening to people. I also don't like how he's behaved in the aftermath, where he hasn't really taken accountability as far as I can see publicly. You just get a lot of, oh, I'm so sad. I'm so sad about this. But there's never a thing of like, here's what I did wrong, or here, you know, I was inexperienced. And one thing Furyk said was, we didn't prepare Keegan Bradley to win, which I was really glad he said that. Now, why are you appointing him to the President's Cup vice captaincy, right? Do you see something in this guy that's different than what happened at Bethpage, which is a complete disaster? Personally, looking from the outside, I would like a complete divorce from Keegan Bradley. I hated seeing that he was appointed President's Cup vice captain.
But is there not an American thing. Go back to what you were talking about earlier. Yeah. Is there not something that Keegan Bradley, if there's any humility there at all, will have learned from last year and gone, actually, the mistakes I made were these things. Let's not do them again.
Exactly. I'm waiting for that. But there's nothing like that. There's nothing like that. There's only this sense of self-pity, with the underlying implication in my mind being that, you know, I really didn't do anything wrong. Just a bunch of bad things happened, blah, blah, blah. Even in the middle of the Ryder Cup, like putting out Morikawa and English again, I thought was just such a sign of stubbornness in a bad way, of like, I'm going to show you, everybody criticized me, I'm going to send these guys out to win and show you what's what. And it's like, no, they got killed again. They got murdered by Fleetwood and Rory. So Yes, long story short, I hate the move. I hate it. I hope Furyk doesn't do it. And I think it's a terrible sign, of the U.S. not figuring it out. But I'm not going to panic about it. But it's just like, what is the point here? Like, what is the point of Keegan Bradley? Just admit you made a mistake and move on and bury it in history if you can.
Hey, lads, with Scotty in crisis, who will be the next world number one?
Scotty in crisis. I'm going to read you, Nathan, I want to read you the last few finishes Scotty Scheffler has had. So he's ranked number one in the world by about a million. Third at the Byron Nelson, 14th at the PGA, second at the Cadillac, second at the Heritage, second at the Masters. this is a man in crisis.
I just had a quick look.
Yeah.
At the world ranking. So as you mentioned, he's a distance ahead. He's on 16.5. Yeah. McIlroy's on 9.7. Cam Young, third in the world, 7.1. Matt Fitzpatrick, over 10 points behind. But not only that, points won this year, he has won more points than anybody else. Yeah. Now, he has lost more points than... He's actually down... On points.
He's down 8 points.
8 points, yeah. Across the year, but only because what he had done this time last year was insane. So he's 269 points so far this year, and second best is Cam Young on 228. Nobody else, from what I can see, is over 200.
Yeah, it would be interesting to me if Scotty didn't play the rest of the year and Rory won the last two majors and the FedEx Cup playoffs, if he would even be number one. But Scotty has built up such a resume that it would be hard for even in the most extreme circumstance. So no, I mean, here's the question. If Scotty, let's say Scotty did, you know, get hurt or something, or he didn't play anymore for the next year, who's the guy? And it's hard to say that, Nathan. I'm looking at it. I don't see like a dominant like alpha, really.
No.
Rory obviously would be number two.
But it's not going to be Rory, because Rory's never going to play enough now to realistically... Yeah, Get back to world number one.
No, I agree. And it's like, and so then you're looking at like Cam Young, but he's still never won a major. And we don't know, like his form's dropped off maybe slightly. It's like, would Fitzpatrick be the guy to get up there? And then after that, you're going, I don't really know. I don't see the guy. I don't see
the guy.
Does
John Rahm come back to the PGA Tour in the next year and suddenly dominate?
It's my moment. Yeah.
You are sort of looking at, and there's a question in on Blades Brown. You're sort of looking at that as the next world number one, a Jackson Coyven who's going to turn pro and maybe is the next big thing in golf and out of nowhere has a load of points to win, wins them very quickly, wins a couple of majors. But it's very hard to see anyone in the next 2 years getting beyond Scotty.
No. And that, again, that's if Scotty ran in place. And I don't think Scotty's going to run in place. I think there's a very good chance he wins a major this year. And, you know, I think he's like, Scott, I don't expect to see anybody in the number one spot in the next 5 years, quite honestly. I think Scotty's that good and that he's going to dominate for that long. Blades Brown, I don't know. I'm one of these people who, I do this in all sports, not just in golf, but in my team sports. I don't really prognosticate or get super into it until I see somebody win. And then when they win, I start taking them seriously. But so Blades Brown, I mean, obviously seems very talented young guy. But I'm not going to go nuts over him until he wins a tournament. But I guess just like the very broad, vague answer is I'm impressed with watching him play. I mean, I think he's could be very good. It's just that you never really know, do you? So I'm like, we'll wait and see on Blades Brown.
Last, I don't even know if this is a question. But The Beard completed a survey for the RNA and the USGA and was relating to handicaps for simulator golf. WTF. Seriously, WTF. Has the world gone mad?
Ah, Beard, if not for you, where would we be? We need guys like you on the front line keeping us from the madness of
you and your American simulator compatriot, the mustache.
And the mustache.
But he's got guns, get you guys together. So we fear him.
We got to get you together for the like a buddy comedy, The Beard and this fictional American character, the mustache that we've invented.
I'm not convinced The Beard isn't a fictional character.
No, I know he's very. Oh, you're saying we don't know that he's not?
He could be a bot, an AI bot.
Yeah, that would be the first thing that made me go. Maybe AI is the future. If it could invent the beard, we're all in trouble. Yeah, I don't know. Simulator golf, they keep trying to, you know, shove it down your throat. I don't like it, but that's just me.
Is there, yeah, like it sounds mad, but then now with your handicap that you can, and you should enter casual rounds as part of your handicap, that if you have a simulator, if you're playing simulator golf on a regular basis, you know, it's a form of play.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, and as the tech gets better, I get it's its own thing. I get it. To me, it's like pickleball compared to tennis. It's not real. But hey, wow. You know what? I don't want to, as my wife would say to our children, I don't want to yuck somebody's yum. If you enjoy simulator golf, have at it, man.
Well, as my wife would be saying when I tell her what you said about pickleball, go fuck yourself.
Who will say that?
My wife about your pickleball comments.
Well, look, it's a little bit. I've played pickleball and I've enjoyed it, but it's a second tier. Like, let's just be real. It's for old people. No, just kidding. Apologies to your wife.
Wow, you're really enamoring yourself right now. It's not. In fairness, well, it is not rigmarole.
It's true. Can I ask you a question? A serious question. Does your wife consume your content?
No.
Yeah,
Jesus mine doesn't Christ. Either. What a question, Brona. The filthy mind on you, Brona.
Oh, yeah. Brona, come on, Brona. Your Brona's better than that.
Brona, I thought Brona was better than that.
Oh, unbelievable. Yeah.
Okay. I was taking your question at face value. Is that?
I hear it now. Nathan, does your wife watch the sports material?
Not if she can avoid it.
Yeah. No, my wife, I don't think my wife has ever read like an article I've written about golf. She's written stuff I've read that's not about golf, but absolutely no interest in golf. And I kind of like it that way. I think like I wouldn't like if my wife came home and like wanted to talk about the thing I'd written that day. That would feel weird to me.
Yeah. I don't know. She's questioning your Wyndham Clark hot take.
Yeah, no, like no thanks. Like, no,
I need a safe space where at least here I might know more about this topic than anyone else.
Yeah, and so my wife plays tennis, and I also think it's there's a funny imbalance there that you might find too, Nathan, where it's like golf takes like 5 hours, right? And then my wife goes out and plays, and she's home in 2 hours and back with the kids and everything. So I also don't want her playing golf because I don't want to have the kids for 5 hours alone on the weekend, even, as much as I love them.
Like there's 500 million Instagram accounts of this exact thing of the man being, I'm going to take one for the team this weekend. I'm going to tee off at 7 o'clock on Saturday morning. I'm going to get it out of the way good and early. And what time are you back? I guess I'm back about 1 o'clock.
I'm
doing you a favor here. Yeah. I could play at midday and be gone till, you know, nighttime, but no, I'm going to get up early and have my alone time.
100%. Yeah.
Wow.
The wives. We love them, don't we?
That went down a dark path.
Well, that's Brona's fault, okay?
Brona's a disgrace.
I thought you hired people of character over there. This is disappointing.
I'm shocked. Shocked and horrified. Shocked and horrified. Right.
To be fair to Brona, the way I phrased that was like the worst. That's actually on me.
It's got to be said. Shane Ryan on that very high note.
Yes.
Till next week. The Murphy and Ryan line, as it's now going to be called.
Oh, my God.
I feel like I've been in now. I've been in. Good luck.
Yeah. Thank you. Bye. Go and tell all my exes where right here in Dardanelle, all picket town. Little J.D. Starter.